nobody's going to see what we do with our hands here. Like, cheering, yeah, getting in the mood. We lost our humor, and now we do anything coming up into our minds to get in a good mood again.
To bring it back.
To bring it back. Two humor coaches who lost their humor, trying to cheer themselves up.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what I think is really strange?
No.
This is episode number 14. And I noticed that in a humor podcast, we very often talk about dying and death.
But of course.
Of course.
You're surprised.
I'm surprised. Surprise me.
No, I think it's logical. I mean, life is about death.
Mm-hmm.
Humor is about life. So humor is about death.
Okay.
As simple as that.
So we're going to die anyway?
Yes. I mean, I hope not now or not in the following hour, but yes, we're going to die.
Following hour. Maybe 2 or 3 hours left. And what could we do better than spend this time with laughing and humor and,
Well, if we find our humor back. I mean, that's the only...
If we find it back. Okay. Now we'd see, we will try it and see if we fail or not.
Yeah. And if we fail, we can just erase the recording and then nothing has happened.
No. I think we publish it anyway.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go.
Business Lemonade, der Podcast rund um das Thema Humor und den professionellen Einsatz von Humor im Business. Hier geht's jetzt heiter weiter mit Heiko Link.
Marlene Becker is the guest in my show today, and I can't say it often enough that I'm really, really proud to have got a swimming tiger in my podcast. And if you are wondering about a swimming tiger, you have to check the show notes, and then you will know that there's a very, very great video of Marlene in a tiger costume swimming in a Dutch river to convince her customers to book her. Marlene, you are a podium coach.
Mm-hmm.
In German, we maybe would call it a Bühnencoach. Mm-hmm. So you show people how to act on stage. You show entrepreneurs.
With humor.
Oh, okay. Oh.
That's very important.
Failed already. Mm. Yeah. You teach entrepreneurs to do good presentations on stage with humor. And you are a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How would you describe your job? What is it you're doing?
Well, when I answer the question in Dutch, I say ik handel in humor.
Yeah.
I trade in humor.
Yeah.
And I do different things just like you explained. So, for example, this Monday I will give an online workshop which is called Humor for Courageous Entrepreneurs. So that is a live online workshop via Zoom, and then I teach them how humor works exactly. I try to make a video every week, so that is something important to do, to show people my style of humor, to give them advice or tips about presentation with humor. I forgot the question. Okay, but this is good. What's happening? Because
you're losing everything.
Because I think humor kind of ontstaat. Humor is the humus of humor. The fertilizer of humor is miscommunication, is failures, is the shit in life. So that I forget the question could be an ingredient of humor. But we lost our humor, so it's not...
Yeah, it could be a great starting point for something humorous new, but we lost our humor.
Okay. Yeah.
How did it happen that you ended up as a humor coach? What did your parents say?
What did my parents say? Well, I didn't need my parents to prevent myself from getting a humor coach because I think I was 22, and I'm 43. I was 22 when I discovered, which in Dutch is called cabaret. Well, you also have it, but it's slightly different. It's more comedy in Holland. Cabaret is comedy in Holland.
Ah, okay.
I did a course at one of the worst periods in my life. And that was the only evening where I felt lively, where I felt light, where I felt relieved. That was on the comedy course I followed. And but I didn't have enough self-esteem or trust in myself to take it that serious that I could make money with it.
Yeah.
So I had to wait for 6 years ago. I was 37 until I was 37. And then I had the guts to try to make money with humor and stage or humor on stage or learning other people how to use humor on stage. And that's 6 years ago now. And during that, say, 20 years, cabaret or comedy has always been in my life. I tried to get rid of it, but it didn't work. Every time it just popped up again, and I felt the drive, the urge, the need to do something with it. So at that lowest point in my life, when I was 22, I discovered comedy, and then things started getting better. I did a studies. It's called drama teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I learned how to teach other people play, a play on stage. And after that, I thought, okay, what do I want to do? And I became an actor in training sessions. I don't know if there is a German word actually for it, but in Holland, it's quite common that when you do a communication course or, mostly a communication course, you can try out a situation with an actor.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell me...
I did that as well. For
you did as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did that as well.
Okay.
I played a mean man, annoying women. This was a doctor's place where they had only female staff, and you had to go into separate rooms with them, and some of the men couldn't keep her hands on where they should keep them. So, sometimes you had problems when, like, somebody wanted to meet the doctor, and it took 3 months or 2 months until you could get there, and then you had some really angry person on the phone, and I was the mean patient, like,
great.
Annoying them. Yeah,
yeah.
That was really.
Yeah. It's really enjoyable, isn't it?
It is. And
it's lovely.
And you just can be like yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. You can be your better or worse self.
Yes.
So that's what I did after my studies as a drama teacher. And then after the third reorganization, I was so disappointed that they didn't fire me. There was a third reorganization, and I thought, I don't think I like this new organization. So we were bought by another company, and I thought, well, I hope they fire me this time. But they didn't. And then I thought, what to do? So that's the kind of push I needed to go and fly away and become an entrepreneur. So that's when I took the leap and tried to earn money with humor and stage, and succeeded.
So great. I thought about making money with humor 16 years ago, and I started to do it, I think, seven, eight years ago. I have to look up my own CV. But only not as the main thing I do. And at the beginning of this year, I decided, okay, now only humor. And then Corona came. Bah, fuck. What do you like most about your job?
Being on stage.
Being on stage.
Yeah, being on stage, working with people, that's what I really, really love.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks ago, I kind of presented it was called a webinar, but it turned out to be a kind of live TV show. I mean, it wasn't broadcasted on TV, but it was really in a TV studio, and yeah. I had my own desk, and I had three guests, and it was really professional. And I loved it. Really loved it. It was a live broadcasting to, I think, about 200 technicians.
Wow.
And I really like the tension of a live broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to do it at that moment. And when things go wrong, okay, just solve them at the moment because yes. It's once in a lifetime. Wow. And it really resembles the tension, the positive tension when yeah. I perform on stage. It's also, you have to do it at that moment and peak, or how do you know? You have to, no, it's not peak, that's Dutch. You have to.
The peak is the highest point. Like,
yeah, yeah, you have to. It has to happen at that moment, yeah. Between in that time frame, and that's what I really love.
And why do we have this strange thought that this pressure is something positive?
Well, it takes some time to perceive it as a positive thing. Because in the beginning, it's really frightening that yeah. you have to do it in that time frame, and you yeah. have to be funny, and you have to make people laugh. I mean, yeah. it's horrible.
It's horrible. I know what you're talking
it's
about.
It's horrible, yeah. And it's so. You feel. I mean, I every time when I make new material, when I think of new sketch, and I try it out on real people. It is scary because it's something I put out in the world, and I until the moment it's I haven't put it out into the world. It's in my safe space. It's in my safe space, so I can still think it's really funny
yeah.
when it's not. Or yeah. So that is always a scary moment to share it with the world and yeah. hope they'll laugh and not be quiet and fly away. I mean, flüchten. Yeah.
Flüchten, yeah.
Flüchten,
yeah.
Yeah.
Run away. Yeah.
Run away, yeah, run away, yeah.
I'm asking because you describe the pressure, the risk, and what else did you say? That is scaring. It's scaring. And when you work as a podium coach, I think your clients, that's exactly what they must fear. That yeah. must be their problem.
Yeah.
And I believe that there are an awful lot of people out there who have this fear.
Yeah.
So that's why I was wondering why do you like it? You like the risk. You like the scaring yeah. part.
Yeah.
This is a change of the perspective, I assume. How do you manage that? Can you explain it to your clients? Well, just change this and then it works? Or you lose your fear or see it from a different point of view? And this is the point of view I would suggest? Or
well, what I tell... There are different types of performance coaches, eh? Or bühnen coaches.
Mm.
So you have the type of coaches, and they say you have to do this. Don't do this. So don't. You have to stand still on the stage. You shouldn't walk on the stage. You have to keep your hands still. You should lower your voice, and
yeah.
you have all kinds of strict instructions what to do, what not to do. I'm not that kind of performance coach.
I'm glad to hear that, yeah.
Because what I believe is that, and that's the most, I think, for me now, it's the most interesting and the most difficult part for my clients is to try to relax on stage while have a certain healthy tension mm-hmm. to perform. At the same time, so you need relaxation, so your mind won't. How do you say it? I mean, when you step on a stage, your mind is going like, oh my God, what am I going to do?
Yeah,
How's the public audience is going to react? Do I still remember my words? Oh my God, the light is very. My Dutch
very
is
bright.
Going through very bright,
yeah.
And I mean, your head goes really crazy.
Yeah.
And to find your relaxation within the craziness of your head is one of the most difficult things and one of the most interesting things I learn entrepreneurs. So I don't say you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. I try to learn them to relax and to be themselves on stage.
Yeah.
That's what I try to learn them. And what I also learn is how to build a good story. A good story with humor, with recognition for the audience, etc.
Being yourself could be the big problem. You don't want to be. Maybe you don't want to be yourself because you are scared that people don't like you or think, look at him or her. And you reminded me.
Sorry. But I think everybody can be interesting on stage.
Yeah.
That's what I really believe. But some people need to do a lot about it to be interesting on stage.
Okay, there's just two things coming up into my mind when you're talking about this. One is something Keith Johnson did for improvisational theater. And I read that before every training, he surrounded himself with all the actors and said, okay, look, I want the stage to be a safe place. A stage is safe. So this is an agreement you can make with all the actors. But you can't make it with the audience.
Yes and no. I mean, in a certain way, you can prepare yourself on the audience. How can I explain this? One of the most important things is what I call to a kind of fine-tune your own energy. And energy is a kind of fluffy word. I mean, what is energy? But it, you have to fine-tune your own emotions, your mindset, the way you feel at the moment you get on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that in a good way, what I do myself and what I also teach my my clients is to set an intention. So to remind yourself, how do I want to feel on stage, and how do I want to the relationship with the audience? How do I want it to be?
Yeah.
And what I remind myself of 99% of the time is, I want to have fun.
Yeah.
Because when I have fun, the audience will love me anyway. Whatever I do. And I want to have fun with the audience, together with the audience.
Yeah.
So I just want to play and I want to have interaction.
Yeah.
So I kind of visualize that I feel bright and happy and energetic and that I have a good connection with the audience. I mean, it's not a guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
Not a guarantee, but it is an important ingredient to prepare yourself and, to kind of focus your attention on a positive outcome.
When I think of myself, if I have a day, if I have a training course,
mm-hmm.
It's kind of stage. Or when I'm on stage I do this provocative coaching on stage as well. And I have a bad day and I'm in a bad mood. I don't know what happens, but once I'm on stage in front of the group of people, something changes and I can rely on it. Maybe there will be a day where it doesn't work, but you can rely on it. But when I heard you talking, I also thought that a lot of people play a role in their life. so they don't want to show others that they have a bad humor, a bad mood, and bad humor as well. failing is fun. It is. And so they play like being in a good mood, stuff like that. But this is very bad if you do it on the long term. You end up
burnout or depressed or whatever. Yeah.
So I hope this is not going. This is not necessary on stage. Like,
yeah. Well, I believe that. I mean, I recognize your experience that when I get on stage or when I get in front of a group, a kind of switch is turned on and I feel connected to myself. Sometimes after the performance or after the workshop, I go like, like a balloon, you but at the moment, I'm there. I feel alive. I feel connected. I feel, and I don't know exactly what it is, but sometimes I think you're the right, at that moment, you're the right person at the right place, and you're doing what you do best and what you like best. And that's, I don't know, something just, it just works. It just flows. It just goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I said two things came up into my mind. The second thing is what you described with the risk and being scared and stuff like that is a different perspective. I know a lot of people who say, when I go on stage and there is a big audience, this makes me nervous. If there's a small audience, I'm not that nervous. For me, it's the other way around, because I think if there is a big audience, if there are, I don't know, 50 people, there must be at least 1, 2, 3 people being interested in what I say, asking questions and not just looking serious at me and making me nervous. If I've got 3 people, there's quite a higher chance that nobody likes it.
In your case.
So I think this, most people are very surprised when I'm telling that I feel safer with a bigger audience. And it's not for my ego. It's just I think there's a higher chance, as I said, that somebody likes it, you know. And
Well, I don't know if you don't have a question, but I just react to it.
No, it's a different perspective, like your perspective. Like you like the risk and the scaring part of it. And
I have certain thoughts about it, because I think everybody has their own fear when getting on stage. For one person, it is the fear of not remembering the words they're going to say. Mm-hmm. And for you, it is, I hope it's not a small audience, because chances are that less people are going to like me or my story. And for other people, it's big audience. And, all different kinds of fears. And I think the biggest job you have to do as a performer or as a person who's in front of big groups of people is to get another perspective on your fear. And nowadays, when I get nervous, because I do get nervous, and you have two options. One option is thinking, oh no, oh my God, now I'm getting nervous. Oh no, I'm sweating. And I have to get on stage within 10 minutes. Oh my God, I need to get quiet. I mean, that's one option. Yeah? Do you have a picture?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And the second option is to think, all right, this is cool. Okay, I feel the energy. Oh, this is cool. My body is making itself ready to perform. It's gathering all the energy I need when I'm getting on stage. Okay, yes, I feel nervous, and this is exactly the right energy I need to have a great performance when I go in front of these people. So it is, you talked about a different perspective. And that was, thank you for mentioning that, because that is really what you can do. So you get another perspective on your fear and on what you experience what kind of fear you experience before you get on stage, or when you are on stage. I mean, you see some people looking like that and not reacting, or this is an interesting story. I performed one of my comedy shows.
Yeah.
And it was a kind of, we call it a living room festival. Okay. So you perform in a living room.
Mm-hmm.
No theater, no theater lights. So it's they see you very clearly, but I could see the audience as mm-hmm. well. So no hiding in the dark. And it was a show about my childlessness. So I don't have any children, and that's quite painful for me. And I made a show about it. So that's my new child, my show. And I played this comedy show. And I was this woman. She was sitting on the front row on the right for me. And the first 10 minutes, she was okay. She was looking and just, I don't know. She was there. She was okay. And after 10 minutes, she was, and I'll try to explain so that the listeners get the picture. She was staring down. She had her head on her her hand on her forehead, and was looking down all the rest of the show. And my head went like, oh no, she really doesn't like the show. What did I do wrong? Oh my God, she isn't laughing. And she was in my sight, not really in front of me, but I saw her all the time.
Yeah.
I ended the show. People were walking past me.
Let me guess, she was the one who liked it the most.
She was really touched by my show. She was so touched that she just couldn't handle her emotions and tried to.
Yeah.
And she said, thank you. Thank you so much for your show. And that's why I say to all my clients, never, never, ever judge persons on the way they look during your performance. Yeah. Never, ever.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the people with the smile, they really don't like it, but they are so polite that they keep smiling because they want to encourage you, but they hate you.
It's like going to a bad restaurant. Did you like the food?
Where did I hear that story?
You don't want to notice it, anybody to notice it.
Yeah.
But if you need more examples for your clients, I made the same experience several times, that you had people looking very serious, not asking any questions. So when I'm on stage, I like to see the audience. I like asking questions. I like people who say, I doubt that it's true what you say, so I can get connected and we can talk about it. And let's make it really interesting.
Yeah.
Compared to a PowerPoint presentation with 80 slides and hoping not anybody is going to ask, you know. And I really had that when I finished. The guy where I was looking at the whole time thinking, what can I do? He looks like he doesn't like it. And I say anything. Can I get him? Can I get in touch? Can I connect? And he came and asked questions. And just he didn't want to do it before all the others, or one had some private questions from himself. And
Yeah.
And that maybe sometimes you're right and he or she really doesn't like it, but then you will never know.
No. So that's another advice I give to my clients is when you perform, I mean, focus on the people that smile. Focus on the people mm-hmm. you have a feeling that they like what you say.
Yeah.
And they, because that encourages you and it gives you fuel to go on and to get and stay in a good mood. So, and the stupid thing is we have a tendency to look at the people that you don't get a connection with and that are looking moody, or that they just don't show any emotion, and you go like, okay, what's going on with the face? What's going on in their heads? I don't know. And it really can drain your energy. So I like to just focus on the people that are laughing, that are looking friendly and nice to you, even though it could be that they just didn't like what they see. I mean, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
great. Yeah. Marlene, you said that you have to go through the shit of your life to be
No, humorous. Are we going to talk about this?
Yes.
No, I don't want to talk about my shit. That was a joke.
Okay, you said you're going to have to go through the shit of your life. Is it the good or the bad news? I mean, to be humorous, you have to go through the shit of your life. Can't I be humorous, a humorous person without the shit?
No.
No.
Well, I mean, you have different types of humor. And the humor, the kind of humor I like, and because I make it, and because I love myself. No, that's stupid. Is humor which, underneath which you can feel, okay, wow, okay, she really experienced some shit in her life, and I can connect to the shit in that she experienced. Not that you exactly need to have experienced the same things, but I mean everybody you just in the beginning we talked about that there's death in every podcast.
Yeah.
And everybody has shit in their lives. I mean, it's just being human. You have shit in your life.
Yeah.
And for me, the best way to deal with the shit is first to go through it, and then after you've gone through it, just laugh about it. Make jokes about it. I mean, make jokes about
I'm curious to hear an example now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the examples is my my full comedy show about my childlessness. I don't know, is that an English word? I don't know. I didn't prepare these words.
Childlessness?
Yeah. I couldn't have any children.
Yeah. You said when we talked on before the podcast, you said that you had a comedy show combining humor with pain.
Yeah.
And that your pain was that you cannot have children.
Yeah.
And you made a comedy on that?
I made a show about this subject.
Okay.
So it's about when, and I start telling the public or telling the audience that I met my husband and we were in love and we wanted to buy a new house. We lived in Amsterdam, but we moved to a lovely city more in the rural area, with a big house and especially for children, with lots of nice playing grounds. La 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 la. And we said it all perfectly, perfectly, perfectly. And it's difficult to do it in English. It's difficult to translate things of the show into English, but I try to explain it anyway. And I kind of make fun of my...
It has to work.
Yeah, it has to work.
On stage.
Yeah. So I really got very... narrow-minded. So the only thing I was focused on was how do I realize, or how do I get a child? How do I mean, everybody knows how you...
Yes, I know. I've heard of it. I mean, I don't have any experience, of course, but I heard about it.
And after a year, you get really nervous because, okay, nothing happened. I mean, we practice a lot and we did the things you need to do to get a child. But after a year, it didn't happen. And I'm really getting into the show, but it's about the humor in the show. And what I did is, in the whole show, I make fun of myself in that whole process of trying to get a child, discovering, okay, this is not working. The pain, the sadness that it caused, the dilemma it caused, because it's my husband's fault. I mean, he has shitty... shitty semen.
That's
shitty,
what my grandfather said. You need a different man, and then it works. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it was up to me. I want to stay with my husband, or did I want a child?
Yeah.
But so that is I tell my whole story from the beginning, from the idea of getting a child until the moment, okay, I accept that this is going to be my life without a child,
yeah,
but with my husband, because that is where the love started. And it's not that I was looking for a father of my child. No, yeah, I wanted, yeah, a love of my life.
Yeah. I just imagined you being on stage saying, like, I bought this big house with 10 rooms for 10 kids, having sex 10 times a day, and it didn't work. Like,
well, I asked the audience, okay, tell me, how many times do you need to have sex to have the most or the biggest chance to, bam, to be successful,
yeah,
at once?
Be successful at once.
And it's so funny that people can just say, well, I think it's so many times. It's so many times. And that's one of the moments I really love about my show, that people just say, okay, well, it's only, you only need to do it once. Only once. But I want to do it more. Okay, more.
You only need to do it once?
Yeah.
It's a woman's answer. You need 100 of times is a man's answer.
Oh. And then they have guessed what the right answer is, because there is no, yeah, right answer, of course. I say, well, just to be sure, we did it 69 times in a month while hanging in, it's humor, while hanging, okay, in a lamp,
yes,
Praying to all kind of goddesses to make sure, goddesses of fertility, to make sure that everything is going to be as quick as possible, or the how do you call it, the conception is going to be quick as possible.
Yeah.
So that's a way I kind of try to make fun of my own.
You're reminding me to a physiotherapist I went to in the past. He was wondering why my wife and I, we don't have children as well. And he said, are you taking a bath before having sex? And because you need cold testicles. If you have warm testicles, the spermium is too slow. You know, it's warm and slow and, yep, comfortable and doesn't want to move. You know, you need cold, you need a bottle of ice or something like that. A glass with ice water.
So maybe you, yeah, should have put on a tiger costume.
Yes.
You should have swam in the river.
Yes, 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 yes. I should have done that.
Yeah, but unfortunately.
I'm more the sauna kind of guy.
The sauna?
Sauna, yeah.
Ah, me neither. No. I don't.
Doesn't
not
work. Oh, you're confusing me.
Love to do the confusion. Also,
yeah,
also a good ingredient for good humor.
Yes, we need to go to a different topic now.
It's, okay, it's go to a different topic. Urgent. Do it now.
I will stay there for another question. Comparing this with the being on stage and thinking I have to perform now, everything has to be perfect. What I sometimes heard is that once a woman says, "Okay, I don't get children," and this pressure is gone, then it works sometimes.
Oh, stupid advice.
Stupid advice? Okay.
Yeah.
Stupid advice.
I mean, I got a lot of stupid advices. It is a scene in my show that I go to the doctor after a year and I yell at him, okay, I want you to sign for a result obligation in this project, so I kind of
make a contract.
Yeah, sign here and for your
money back guarantee.
So I really put a lot of pressure on this doctor.
Oh, you move the pressure to the doctor. Okay.
Yes. So that's what you do.
You have to move the pressure. Okay.
I move the pressure.
Yeah, like at work. Like, yeah.
Exactly.
The boss moves the pressure to the staff. Yeah.
Always a good idea.
Yeah.
And he and then, well, he has to tell me, well, it's not working. I'm not going to sign anything to guarantee a good result. And in the show, well, he did it in real life as well. He told me, well, just relax. Oh, no, he told me, okay, there have been many, many couples in my office, and they are always angry and they are sad and they are kind of hopeless because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then I always tell them, I've got only one good advice.
Yeah.
You just have to let it go. Mm. You have to let it go.
Yes.
And then a month later, they come back to my office and they tell me, yes, it worked. I'm pregnant. But I mean, it's such stupid advice. It's really crazy. I mean, how do you let it go? Something that you really, really want. How do you let it go? And then people who say, listen to me, what you need to do, let it go. Don't trust them ever because they have no idea how to do it. I mean, they don't know how to do it. If they would tell me, okay, you have to let it go, and this is step one, step two, step three, step four, okay.
And then it's gone.
Nobody ever tells you how to let it go.
Yeah.
So I didn't kill this doctor.
Yeah.
Also not in the show, but it's a stupid advice.
How to let it go is a big doctor's secret. Yeah.
And they just don't know.
Humor is, you said you have to relax. You can use humor as a relaxing tool.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use that? And how does that work? I mean, maybe you can tell us the secret. How to relax with humor.
Well, it's quite an important question at the moment. Because, well, just like you experienced during Corona, it's quite hard to find your humor or to have humor in the big emotions that there are, right. The uncertain future we have and things like that. So, there's step one. You need to go through the shit first. So that's the first step. That's always the first step. In my case, I meditate a lot.
Okay.
I mean, I'm really outgoing, but I really need to go inward and to connect with my emotions and my thoughts just to relax. And the funny thing is, for me, that is a tool to create some distance to my own experience, and that's an important. I mean, I assume that it has been in your podcast before. You need some distance to make humor about it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I experience that I sit like this, and then I just see myself feeling really a victim of the situation and of the coronavirus. that really can make me laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, what I didn't explain to the listeners is how my brain works, because you ask a question, I start talking, and then my head goes, I get like 10 ideas, which I can tell. So sometimes, and then I lose the question. And that's what is happening right now. So now I've lost the question because I explained how I work.
So how to relax with humor.
A relaxation tool. Sometimes just exaggerating the way you feel can help to... So when you feel down,
yes,
just exaggerate why you feel down and that you feel down. I feel so, my life is completely hopeless. And
yes.
I mean, because of Corona, I can't do this and that. And also the sink is not working. And I mean, that is really a very good tool to kind of relax.
Really?
Yeah.
So crying, and in German we would say jammern.
Jammern. Yeah. Jammern. Yeah.
Jammern is allowed.
Yes, of course.
Of course.
But in humor, everything is allowed.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Sounds like something good for me.
Yeah. You should do something with humor. What a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. So that is, exaggerating is a way in which you can, yeah, kind of use humor as a relaxation tool. Sometimes I still don't know how it works, but it has something to do with seeing what you're doing and seeing the lightness or the funniness of it. I mean, in the end, life is a big joke. Let's be honest. Life is a kind of a big joke. I mean, yeah. We run around and try to arrange things, to fix things, to make things happen. But in the end, it's all useless. You die.
It's all for nothing.
You die. It's all for nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that in essence, we are all looking for love.
Yeah.
That's what we're all looking for, and that's what we're working for, and that's why we do the things we do. But the funny thing is, the way we do to try to experience love are not working.
Yeah.
And once you know that, a lot of things get really funny.
I still don't know what Yaman is, but you said Yaman is allowed. And I think this is a kind of accepting the situation, accepting that you are in a bad humor, like on stage, accepting, okay, my body, what you said is, I'm nervous, I see the risk, but my body is preparing itself for going on stage. That's the kind of point of view. And maybe if you manage to accept the bad mood, and instead of chasing it away immediately, I'm in a bad humor, I am in a bad mood, it has to go, it has to go. Maybe this will keep it to stay even longer. So accepting could be a good, I don't know, I'm curious about your opinion, could be a good idea. It gets harder the longer it takes. I mean, accept it for 1 day or 2 days, okay. But if you still have to accept it after a week or two, like with the corona crisis, it starts to get, you think, is this going to end?
Yeah, and sometimes for me, it's also important to make a decision to try to see the humor in a situation.
Yeah.
So one way of dealing with it is just accepting it the way it is. But sometimes you also need to make a decision to change it on purpose. So to start watching silly cat videos.
Ah, cat video.
Or videos you do like.
Yes.
So sometimes it's also a matter of making a decision and not accepting that you stay in the mood you're in. And when to do that, I don't know. No advice, no idea. Try it. Okay. I don't know when you should do that, or just stay in the mood you're in.
Yeah. You say that you believe in the healing power of humor. So what is this? Is this something where humor can heal you, or what do you mean with the healing power of humor?
It has to do with what you just very well analyzed, that accepting the way you feel.
Thanks.
Accepting
Thanks,
the way
Tiger
you
Girl.
Accepting the way you feel is an important step.
Yeah.
In heal yourself. Oh, how do you? I said to you, this is an important question I want to talk about. And when I start talking about it, because this is not something that's on my website. It's something I do. It's something I feel, and I'm starting to find words for it to explain. So I'll try to explain it here. I believe that the way I make my humor is about my own pain. And my pain is in a way your pain. Not exactly, but the feelings you have experienced, the feelings of loss, of a future that when that is completely different than you imagined.
Yeah.
And that is something you recognize.
Yeah.
And it's very healing for people when I tell about my life in mm-hmm. a humorous way to hear their pain in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And when I make jokes about this pain...
I think I lost you there.
Okay.
The client has the pain, and you make the jokes about the pain of the client.
No, my own pain.
Your own pain.
I most of the times I only make jokes about my own pain.
Yeah, with a distance.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
And that's healing for your clients as well, to hear how you cope with your own
shit.
Shit. Yeah.
Yeah, and not perceive for my clients, but for the audience. So now I'm talking about my comedy shows.
Yeah.
And what I notice, or what I, the feedback I get is that because I tell with lightness, with humor, with about difficult subjects.
Yes.
People are relieved that I'm so open to to talk about this subject.
Yeah.
That's one. And two, because I laugh about it, they can relax and see, okay, it's not that bad. I mean, I can laugh about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but I feel that is that it is healing for people to be open about the painful things in life.
Yeah.
So, and the difficult things in life. Now I'm thinking about, is there an example I can mention to make it more clear? Well, to the show about me not being able to get a child because of my husband. yeah. In the show I say he is kutte prutte flutzaad, which I can't translate, but really shitty,
just leave it like blah, 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 blah.
Shitty, very bad.
Yeah.
What is sad?
I mean, other husbands make children for women they are not even married with.
Yeah.
Your husband.
The reactions I got after that show from people with and without children is that they, because of my story, they understand what happens. They understand the, and they have felt the difficulties, the dilemmas, the hope you have every month and the disappointment when things are not working out. And they found it very... what is the right word? Very
relaxing.
Yeah, easing. Relaxing. Yeah,
yeah,
that I could laugh about myself, and so, because that makes it for them. It's a bit late, so
yes,
the words are getting me.
The words are already gone to bed.
Yeah. But. They one day could understand me, and because of the humor, it makes it lighter for them as well.
Yeah.
And I think one of my mission is to talk about difficult subjects to make people relax in a way that they feel, I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one struggling in life. I'm not the only one struggling with this or that. And that is, I mean, that is healing, and doing it not in a serious way is just elevating. No, I don't know the word. It's really lifts you up. It lifts you up.
Yeah, I've got two or three things in mind. Maybe you can confirm it.
Please analyze what I said.
One is, I think that I assume that there are a lot of people in the audience who couldn't imagine before that you can laugh about a problem like that, that this is possible. And then it's relaxing to see that you can do it, and this is giving hope that they maybe one day in the far future will be able to laugh about it as well. And the other thing is maybe they are ashamed of the problem sometimes, and they are not brave. I don't know if brave is a good word. They don't speak about it. They keep it as a secret, and you go on a stage and speak about it. So maybe this gives you an impression like, I don't have to be ashamed of it. I can speak about it. She spoke about it, and this is something that can happen when you, like you said,
yeah.
I'm not the only one with a problem, and you don't have to keep it as a secret inside, always doing harm to you, always worrying you, and you can let it go. And this is maybe kind of letting go. Speak about it, and then, like when we met this evening, and we spoke about something we wanted to have gone before the podcast. That's what came into my mind. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for analyzing my words because
I'm Mr. Analyze.
So. Yeah, no, but it's just yeah. Like you summarized.
Okay, you agree.
Yeah, I do.
Great. I thought about that because before when we started the podcast about two humor coaches who lost their humor, I thought, is it a shame, to lose your humor as a humor coach?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, is it a shame? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
do we have to keep this? That is our secret.
Well, I lose my humor quite often, I have to admit. Yes!
Don't! I can't believe it.
But I think good humor springs from shit. So,
yeah.
I mean, in a way it's good that we also know... I mean, the other... we also know the depth of life, because we also know lovely language, English.
Just forget about TH. Okay?
Yeah. Because it makes it easier for us to understand other people.
Yeah.
Because we know the sadness, and we know when you lose your humor, and you could say it's also a mistake, because life is meant to be light and to be happy and to be lovely.
Yeah.
And during life, we kind of put all kinds of barriers between ourselves and the lightness there is. And it's our job to see, I put my own barrier between me and the lightness. Oh, you silly woman. Just jump over the barrier and ta-da! There it is.
You didn't just say we are the ones who put the barriers in our own lives, did you?
Yeah, you heard me.
And then we have to jump over them.
Yeah.
Why don't we just... stop putting barriers in our lives so we don't have to jump at all?
That would be a great idea. That would be a great idea and advice. Yeah. But how to do it? Let it go.
We will let that go.
Yes.
And see if anybody gets pregnant with it. This was a really, really, really good... I could go on for hours, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, I don't know, but it's late already, and we have done an hour. Would you have thought about that?
Wow.
An hour of talking.
We could do a marathon interview once.
Yes.
For 5, 6 hours. Yes. And then,
yes.
Yeah.
But who will work on the audio file? It will take me ages. Okay. Marlene, if somebody would like to get in touch with you, maybe book you for something, or just have a nice talk or whatever.
Or see the video when I go in my tiger costume in the river.
Yes.
You can go to www.marlenebecker.com.
Yes.
And that's my website. But if you Google me, Marlene Becker with double K, B-E-K-K-E-R. You'll find me everywhere. Okay. On Facebook, Instagram,
LinkedIn.
And I'm happy to receive your invitation connection. Yeah. Connection to...
any comments.
Invitation.
Just write a comment with the shit in your life.
Yep.
but not too smelly. You have to be able to live. The distance needs to be...
or put some whipped cream on it, just like you did in one of your videos, like which I loved.
Thanks a million. Okay, Marleen, thank you. It was so great to have you here.
It was so great to be here.
Du möchtest auch heiter weitermachen? Dann buch jetzt eine humorvolle Beratung bei Heiko Link auf www.business-lemonade.com.
Was good faking what we did. Good faking.
Yeah, that's like you go on stage. Yeah, you feel bad before you go on stage, then you feel good on stage.
Now we just this is the balloon.
Like a balloon. Okay, so we failed. But isn't that great? We have another shit in our life.
Yeah. First very bad podcast of Heiko Link. And Marleen Becker. I don't know. I hope I won't. I mean,
this reminds me to a joke.
Oh,
It's like if you in German it's an Anmachspruch. If you want to meet a woman and have sex with her, you can say, "I'm so bad in bed, you have to see it."
Is this an invitation or
No?
Okay.
Oh. You're asking really dangerous questions here.
Living on the edge.
I imagine you coming home saying to your husband, "I'm pregnant."
Will he notice? I mean,
I don't know if you still keep on trying.
Okay.
Okay, I think we will cut out. Well, it's late anyway.
Yeah, it's very late.
It's very late.
And I'm tired.
Yeah.
What about you? Tired as well?
I feel a little bit cheer up. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm also a bit streng, harsh. Harsh on myself.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel...
I was perfect. 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 I can't even say it. I can't even say the German word. Perfectionist. Dings.
Perfectionist.
Perfectionist, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you are.
Yeah.
You have this mind going in 1 million directions at the same time, and you can't even think about sorting all the thoughts. And in the same time, you are a perfectionist.
Yeah, and afterwards I think, oh no, I could have said that better, and I could have said this, or I could have mentioned this example.
Nobody will like me.
They will hate me.
They will hate you, yeah. Well, you have another piece of shit in your life, and then...
Thank you for this shit in my life.
Yeah.
Well...
I went on a walk, this is the last thing I say, and then turn the microphone off. I went on a walk in a forest, and there was a horse. Yeah. And this was the way you walk, and there was nothing growing, no grass or trees, or because it's the way you walk through the forest. And there was this horse shit, and in the horse shit you had some really green and nice looking grass growing in the shit. You know, I have to put this picture in the show notes. I've got it somewhere on my computer, and I thought, well, that's where the grass is the greenest.
Well, there is this saying, it says you need, or you have to try to turn your shit into a fertilizer.
Yes.
I mean, I haven't, it's not my invention, this saying, so that's why I don't use it, but I think it's quite a strong saying that you need to turn your shit into your fertilizer. And by using humor, you make it fertilizer, I think.
Yeah. Like bioenergy.
Yeah, exactly.
Use it to heat your home.
Yeah.